Blog Talk Radio.
Nimupasani mendo, munione se moendela. Nimupasani manda, munione se moguilila. Wamelele zoendela, kwenze kwa masobela. Nisukile ni musima, nipembela. Why am I here? It was not clear. Concentrate at the crouching. Couldn't even notice my mama's dead. You be thinking everything's so good right now. Let me tell you about the perfect show I found. Let me introduce him to you, my child. When the fame and the glory fade, he will remain.
Good afternoon from Bonn, Germany. This is Twambo Kapilakisha. Thank you so much for joining me on another program called Diaspora and Truth. I'm so happy to have you here. It's rainy here in Bonn, Germany. The weather has been acting a little crazy. We're going to put that up to global warming, but I just like to say thank you for everybody that has taken the time to join me right now. Before we start the program, I would just like to make a quick announcement. For those of you that listen to Zambia Block Talk Radio often know our host, Dr. Nathan Kama of Perspective, lost his mother, and they're going to be having a celebration of life memorial service today at 6 to 8 p.m. at the All Nations House of Prayer Church in Irving, Texas. So please stay tuned. We're going to have more information about the address. So please, if you are in that area, please go ahead and join them. I would like to introduce my guest for today. I'm really excited to have her on the show. Her name is Mishaunis Richardson, and she is all the way in the USA, and I met her on social media. As lots of people know, I like to meet people on social media and speak to them about different issues that are affecting, you know, Africans, that are affecting Black people in the diaspora. So I would like to welcome Mishaunis Richardson from State of the Black Parent. Thank you very much for joining me.
Hi. Yes. Thank you.
So I would just like to let our listeners know a little bit about State of the Black Parent. This is an organization that has come together to talk about what is going on with the Black families in the USA. This is an organization that is based in the USA. And the reason that I have her on the show today is I would like her to give, you know, an overview of what exactly is going on. We see so many things in the media. We read about them in the newspaper. We see them on TV, and a lot of these things are not true. And also, I'd like to discuss with her a little bit about how all this information would be pertinent to Africans that are living in the diaspora. So I would just like Ms. Richardson to go ahead and let us know, how did State of the Black Parent come about, and who does it consist of?
Oh, State of the Black Parent came through a very much a series of events, occurrences, and also collectively so much in life, you know, growing up in the Deep South. You know, I'm really originally from Louisiana. Growing up in the Deep South and the poverty that we're experiencing, the division between the Northern Blacks and the Southern Blacks, along with, you know, what I was told as growing up in our culture of recent, you know, recent Africans, and, you know, also being in the South, you know, what actually brought about, well, it's a series of stuff, but one of the stuff that brought about it was last year, approximately around February of last year. I came across this article that this lady had written up. I believe it was an article on Your Black World. I believe it was on there, Maria. And it was about the recent Africans and African-Americans that were having this dispute. You know, they had a riot in Minneapolis. And, you know, I know growing up we were, you know, told this and that about, you know, recent Africans that, they were this and they were, you know, supposed to be, you know, just the low form of the earth. And, you know, we had this very much what we was told, this picture painted to us. And on Sundays, you know, they showed a Feed the Children video. So we grow up thinking that is the worst side of life. That's all of Africa. That's how they think. That's how they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so with the riots that occurred in Minneapolis between the recent Africans and African Americans, and this was 300 plus, between 300 people, and it occurred for hours, and fights kept breaking up. And so with the co-host, we were co-hosting a show at the time, and with Maurice Muhammad, and we were, you know, saying, it is something that we have to do about this here. We have to do something about this. We cannot have this going on between the recent Africans and African Americans with the way that they feel about each other, this huge estrangement gap that they have, you know. And a lot of African Americans, they feel that recent Africans are totally another race. That is one of the contributing of how this event came about, along with very much with, you know, I like the State of the Black Parent, the State of the Black Union that Tavis Smiley had in the debate and the topics they had on. And I know it's a lot of work to it, but, you know, getting to this point, I never thought of it. And so it really was a lot of obedience to do this here, because it was like wrestling with God to be like, no, I am not doing this here. I know it's needed. You know, I've been into the surveys. I've been around, you know, from the southern area and now on the East Coast. I've been in very much a lot of community meetings and petitions. And, you know, you learn, okay, it's the laws that hold us back a lot. You know, we still have the, you know, people are so addicted to jobs that when they lose a job, they can. It is very hard for them to move on and accept the fact they've lost their job, and even getting started with, as being entrepreneurs. And even as a child, you know, children are very much trained to be in a job mentality. You know, job mentality. I recall, like in third grade. What actually happened several times where, you know, I was selling popcorn candy, and I mean, I was so intimidated as though I was selling drugs on the campus from what I was told. And it was like, well, no, you can't get a job till you're 18 years old. And so, you know, with all what I just previously stated, being all the contributing factors and theories that have occurred in my life, it's how State of the Black Parent came about, you know. And I, it was like, you know, I had this dream about a children in parade that was in careers. And so I went researching. I was like, I'm sure somebody did this here. You know, I just was like, okay, somebody did this here, you know. And so when I researched, nobody had done did this before. And I was like, you know, so, you know, I'm standing praying and communicating with God that, okay, this is a lot on me. Okay, am I going to have to do this all by myself? I was like, I don't think this could happen. I don't know where it's going to go. And, you know, it was very much obedience for me to go officiate, you know. And I started off with introducing it to Black Parent Connect, HBCU Kids. Information was like, okay. And, you know, she's been on my team since the beginning. Maurice D. Muhammad, Leslie Wright, Cynthia Randolph from the New York area. Very much, you know, that has been a pretty much team that has, you know, from the beginning, has been with this event, promoting it for summer 2014.
Okay. So, I mean, I looked at your website and you had some very interesting articles on there and talking about the New State of the Black Family Report, which was, you know, published in 2013. And comparing it with the report that was written in 1965, where it was mentioned that at the heart of the deterioration of the fabric of Negro society is the deterioration of the Negro family. It is the fundamental source of weakness of the Negro community at the present time. Why do you think Black families are falling apart?
Well, the reason why we're falling apart was then after the civil rights era is because we didn't get comfortable with the privileges that we have. You know, we don't seriously you know, a lot of people live off of their privileges that they have. You know, they feel that history won't repeat itself. Many of our people, they're comfortable, like they live to eat. And since we didn't got comfortable with that, that's what has us reversing, you know, and has a poor, you know, a poor concern of education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we only usually care about the economics until we're executively or judicially affected by it. That's when we care about it. But when you tell somebody about the laws and this is seriously on paper, then they start to think that, you know, that they're, you know, immune, that it won't be them, and they don't care. But as soon as it executively and judicially affects them, they want you to stop everything and cure it for them. And it's like, well, no, well, I informed you of this here, such and such, but you wasn't, and, you know. And it's like, okay, this is where we have to start. And even when you try to repair them of you know, when they're in that executive and judicial situation, you try to, like, okay, this is what you have to do. They want to still skip all that and want the cure. And also, you know, many people are, you know, with the enterprise, they didn't got so comfortable with a job, they feel it's too much work, and they feel that the cure for life is having a job, the dependency on a job.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a transition to basically get you by. So those three aspects, what exactly is affecting the black family, definitely here in the USA.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think the media has played a role in you know, making these problems even bigger?
The media, a lot of people really here, I noticed, like, with a lot of recent Africans, that they are more in tune with the news, especially, you know, they're more in tune with reading. Even though a lot of them are coming here and they are picking up that habit of not having an interest of reading, they're getting just as comfortable as, you know, the African-Americans that's, you know, of here. So many people here really don't watch the news unless it's something fashion, like fashion-wise story of our community. So it's whatever people have more of an interest in style on the news than, or it has to be like a million people, such as with Trayvon Martin situation. It has to actually be like, you know, for our community to really take the serious action, because you have to present it 100+ times, and it has to, you know, they're not going to pay attention to the details. They're just going to take the simple form of it or the easy way of listening instead of paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more about, you know, as the information, you know, even as I put on my, you know, put on the Twitter timeline, the information that's put on, you know, it's not for you to automatically get, you know, and as I've explained to them on radio shows and in person, it's not for you to get there, and because you see a topic that says this here, for you to automatically take it as a topic I say, because I tell you this is the standard, this is the proper way of doing it, or because someone is labeled as a thug, and then when you read the article, you know, it goes deeper in that. Someone has been accused of doing such torturous acts to themselves that really makes no sense. But if we read the details more so will give us the real story than us taking a headline. So it's more about people running on a headline and a few little details instead of taking the time to fully comprehend.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing that you have mentioned that I find really interesting, you said that, you know, a lot of Africans come to a country like the U.S., and stop their reading habits or, you know, listening to the news and things like that. And I guess that's because they also want to fit in because they, you know, identify with other black people and sort of want to fit in what is going on. And you mentioned earlier these riots that happened in Minneapolis. What do you think are the problems between African black people in the U.S. and African Americans? I mean, you know, just to make that distinct difference, what is the problem?
It is a division that we have amongst ourselves as we've been, we've been raised, to see Africa as this very poverty, impoverished people that the beige man had to get there and save them because they were heathens. You know, the recent Africans are the ones that sold Africa, you know, the ones that, you know, that are, you know, within the last few centuries as African-Americans into slavery. And I had a debate with someone when they were saying about the Africans. So I was like, well, still, when, you know what I mean, they didn't have to buy them, regardless, you know, they didn't have to buy them. Exactly how did this come about? It came about through manipulation, because nobody's going to really get there and really sell off their own people unless it's some type of manipulation or trade so that they would not get harmed. And which, you know, is wrong either way, but exactly where did the manipulation start? You know, on Sundays, you know, we see the children. So you think all Africans are like that. And I've known, you know, within the last few years, of, you know, right now I'm around 90%, you know, I'm about the only African-American. There's probably like 20 African-Americans in the region where I'm at. And it's, you know, it's totally different. You know, it's like you know, learning steadily, you know, different from what you're told as a child growing up, especially in the South, because you're told everything is worse than the South. You know, you're told that New York is the most dangerous place. You know, you will never be able to fit in. Our languages are very different in the U.S., really. Like, that is your marking. It can even be used against you, so forth as, you know, communicating, business, so forth like that with people, even in the social service realm. You know, being a Southern Black can really be is a marking of having a different type of language or a barrier communication. But our main thing between recent Africans and African Americans is that estrangement, because we've been estranged from each other. It's like a child being taken away from their parents and put into foster care. And, you know, you could bring them back around their people, but it really just would never, barely ever heal itself, really barely.
Mm-hmm. And so do you think that there is a resentment? I mean, there was one debate that I also had with, you know, somebody that was Black American, somebody that was African living in America, and they brought up things like, well, sometimes Black Americans are mad because sometimes Africans come and they may be better educated and, you know, get better jobs and things like this. Do you think that is a real issue, or is that just people's personal experiences?
Well, actually, I just spoke to someone a few weeks ago that actually was in the riot that occurred last year. And they spoke that is one of the factors. But, I mean, there are even this between the African, you know, those in the motherland, the actual countries of, you know, Sudan and you know, Rwanda and Burundi. Those countries have, you know, the civil and the division amongst themselves also. So that is a factor because, you know, they come here, you know, many recent Africans come here and they're more hungry to learn. They're more hungry as go-getters.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, that is one of the factors.
Mm-hmm. So how are you, as State of the Black Parent, working, you know, to bring solutions to situations like these? I mean, I know that you're concentrating on the Black families in the U.S., talking about education, economics, and empowering them. Are you also working to unify, say, the Africans and the African-Americans? Is that part of the work that you are doing?
Well, actually, the theme of Kiba Line, our logo on our site, is actually it's just not the African-Americans in the U.S. It actually is nationwide. We have an international vendor that has been on our previous show that come on Mondays. At 6 p.m. New York time, that she's coming from Ireland to our event. She was born in Germany and she's from Nigeria and her family is coming to our event. So the theme is to actually bridge that gap between the recent Africans and African Americans in the education, economics, and enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this event for them to be in the parade together, the youth showcase.
Mm-hmm.
And also with the roundtable discussion,
mm-hmm.
definitely understand as we get into the roundtable discussion and we get to discussing this and that, you know, it will go beyond what we've been told. It goes beyond because, you know, I know where I'm from. I don't really, a recent African was very rare in the physical, so we mainly got to know them on Sundays through Feed the Children.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that this will be the opportunity for those, you know, that stay in the communities or regions where you may only see a recent African maybe for a special event, a special conference, or if it's a celebrity that co-happens to be in the area, or if it's, you know, maybe like where there's only maybe like this one set of African family that lives kind of a little bit out, or maybe the only African family that you see maybe like once a decade or so forth, you know, in that area. Or, you know, even those that are around the, you know, that has a huge African population that's around, it's definitely to bridge the gap, to definitely come to a consensus of better improving ourselves and to see how we can, you know, definitely heal from the past.
Now, I would just like you to take a minute and tell us about this event that you're going to have. State of the Black Parent are going to be having a conference in the summer, I believe. This special conference focuses on education, economics, and enterprise. And, you know, everybody's welcome to go to their website, which is www.stateoftheblackparent.org. And you can register for the State of the Black Parent, you know, conference. Take part, you know, have your say, come up with solutions. Could you just tell us a little bit about that conference? What exactly is the mission of the conference?
It is removing. So removing doesn't mean we're going to remove everything as a magician right then and there, but it's removing the barriers. So it's in the process to better managing our lives and still being better productive people in our community in spite of our situation. That is the mission of it. You know, the panel is required to do research so that they will not be referring people to the common people that you always usually have to go to that are usually outside of our community. So it's to recognize those the nonprofits, the grassroots, as our event and organization is grassroots, to definitely recognize them because a lot of nonprofits, as I spoke to them, have spoken out. They don't have the advertising power and the money or the dependable volunteers to actually, you know, they have the grant to provide the service. But, you know, it's usually harder than you got to pay the grant writer and then actually, you know, maybe some stuff that they need help on. So this is the opportunity that, you know, we reach out, we connect, and we bridge the gap and have those resources available for them and opportunity for us to invest in ourselves.
And, you know, one of the things that you stated on your website is that you want to unite Black parents. So as volunteer parents, your team hopes to unite Black parents who share the same interests and concerns while respecting the fact that you each have different background experiences. I mean, as you said, this is obviously going to be a process. Can you give us an idea of how you plan on uniting, you know, all the Black parents? What kind of methods are you going to use?
I'm mainly uniting them with networking. You know, they may be people from, you know, one thing that definitely has, you know, I asked myself, like we're working in the Philadelphia area with our radio show that we have on Mondays, that, you know, you may have 10 people on the line from the exact same neighborhood but don't nobody know each other. But they all have businesses or can serve a purpose between each other. But so they could more so, not like you have to, you know, very much go far out the way or do a lot of research to learn of a Black organization or a Black business in the area. This will be the opportunity here of services that they need. Also, their children being in networks where they can't be like, well, there are no other Black children interested in, you know, being in a reading club. They can never, you know, so that they won't be able to ever say that there's no Black children interested in being engineers, or there's no Black children interested in being a medical student, so I'll settle for being a nurse aide. You know, if you know, it's something if you got to start out like that, you know, it's, you know, that's one thing, but that should, you know, it should not be a long or permanent goal for the majority of our children, and even to respect each other. Someone, you know, they may have their limits as a nurse aide, you know, but we hope to, you know, definitely encourage it, but, you know, this whole, when the new generation come in, that's maybe where they have to start, and that's a spot open for them. But definitely, so they could be in a network of better encouraging each other instead of competing with each other.
And so you're trying to bring back the sense of the Black community. Is this one thing that has really been lost in the American society, would you say?
Yes.
Okay, I would just like to let our listeners know I'm speaking to Ms. Shaunice Richardson. She's from State of the Black Parent, and she's here discussing the state of the Black parent in the United States of America and how this correlates to the African, you know, families that are living in the diaspora, and how the issues of the Black American families also pertain to the issues of the African family. So would you say that African families and Black American families are going through the exact same thing, or would it be, you know, a little different for African families? Are issues the same?
You know, even in, there's so much division over in the motherland, but I know one thing that is steady fact, that with the Somalians, they stick with each other. So you're not coming in there breaking them up, you know, by names or skin shade or so forth like that. They don't usually look out for each other. So they have been held closer now between the other nations. You know, if it doesn't get tended to now, they will be in the same direction as, you know, those of us of the diaspora.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just to let the listeners know, I had an announcement at the beginning of the show. Our host for the Perspective segment, Dr. Nathan Kama, unfortunately lost his mother, and they're going to be having Celebration of Life Memorial Service today at 6 to 8 p.m. at the All Nations Prayer, at the All Nations House of Prayer Church, 2108 Heard Drive, number 100, Irving, Texas, 75038. So if anybody is in the area, please go ahead and show them your support. Go and visit, you know, say a hello. It would be greatly appreciated. So I'm still speaking to Ms. Shaunice Richardson from State of the Black Parent, and I would like to open up the phone lines to anybody that has any questions or comments for her. So if you're listening by phone, please go ahead and press 1 on your keypad. And if you are on Twitter, on Facebook, please go ahead and write us your questions. She's here to take any questions that you have. Ms. Richardson, before we go to the phone lines, I would just like you to give us, you know, the venue for the conference that you're going to be having. Where is the State of the Black Parent Conference going to be taking place?
It's going to be in the Philadelphia in the University Center area. It's at a Black-owned facility, so it's going to be in Philadelphia.
Okay. And when? What are the dates for it?
It is, for those that come early, it's going to be a one-day event, but we're going to have a kickoff that we're in the plan of, but it's for July 20th, the third weekend in July. But we're going to have the Artinware with other activities in the area from July 17th till the 20th in the Artinware.
And so can people come with their children?
Oh, yes, yes, definitely, definitely. We have the parade. The youth showcase, so definitely.
Okay, great. I would just like to find out from you, you know, whilst you're on the show, you're talking about the theme for the conference is, you know, education, economics, and enterprise. So are you also going to have guidance counselors to say, you know, talk about careers? How are you going to handle that?
Oh, well, actually, we also have a panel member that is coming from California that actually will be doing readiness and preparedness, Dr. Chris Hinckley. He's on our panel, and he will be. That's a topic that he's a doctor, and he will actually be doing that topic, and will be there to speak with them and have the information available for him along with others in our network.
Mm-hmm. And have you partnered with other organizations that deal with issues of Black families in the U.S., or is this something that you were doing independently?
We're doing this independently, but we're open with other grassroots organizations to definitely network and further reach. But it's mainly been private, and, you know, Black Parent Connect is a private organization,
mm-hmm.
Private business-wise, not private like secret, but private so far as not a 401c3, you know, nonprofit. So it's a private business. Black Parent Connect is the organization that is honorary panel for the event.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you've talked about, you know, these riots that happened in Minneapolis. Could you tell me when they happened? Because I don't remember reading about them in the news.
Yes, they occurred in February. It was a year ago, February 2013.
Okay. Awesome. So why do you think it is extremely difficult for black people to get on a better level and remain on a level? You know, is it because you do not have the freedom? Is it because the laws are, you know, not working in your favor? What do you think about that?
We are so divided, you know, language-wise, culture-wise. You know, a lot of people, you know, even, you know, from the motherland, whether they're Somalian, Ethiopian, Sudanese, and they're like, you know, they're like, coming here, and even though I can tell that you're an African-American, you're still different from other African-Americans of the North. I could tell by your accent. I could tell by, you know, I even had one, you know, a recent African tell me that, oh, well, I had to leave from the South and because, you know, I'd rather be up in the cold than be in the South. I just could not be there. It's very much a lot of cultural differences. You know, it's very divided amongst us. And a lot of people don't want to let go of that, you know, that culture, even though it's not beneficial, it's not healthy, it doesn't help them to progress. You know, they don't want to move on from it. Then you have those that are sheltered. You mm-hmm. have the northern ones that are sheltered from actually what's going on in the South. Mm-hmm. So they're used to that, the northern culture, and so they think that's the universal black culture, you know, of African Americans in the U.S. And you know, they think of it in a two-dimensional way as hot or cold, when then we are just very diverse and dimensional. But a lot of people have gotten comfortable, and then some are sheltered.
I mean, this is interesting. You know, you talk about, you know, blacks in the North of America and blacks in the South of America. And then if I personally think of the white community in America, I've never really, I mean, you hear about, okay, yes, people in the South. Is there that kind of division between, you know, the Caucasians in America, the way it is with, you know, the black community? Or is this something that we have just created ourselves that we can't seem to let go of?
Oh, that question there, I believe that would have to be a part two segment to really go into detail about that. But let's see. Northern, a good quote on the research that I've been doing within the last 2 weeks was a quote that Betty Shabazz has that's on Wikipedia. And she was speaking about her living in the South and to when she moved to New York. And it's like, it's racism, but it comes in different degrees. Racism in the South is more obtuse, very much more obtuse. Now, in the North, you get it. There are racist people, and there could be people that try to be as racist as the South. Or they try to because they can tell by your look and when you get to talking or some things that you may do that's culture-wise that you bring up here, they try to do those same Southern things even though they know that they don't usually do that, but they do that because they know that you're a Southern black. Mm-hmm. So it comes in different degrees, even though it's more obtuse, it's more everything, of course, in the South. But in the Northern, there are a few that do it, but it's less that you're going to have it, even though you may be that incident that hit it as though, you know, in the South. You may, even, you know, but it's a lesser chance. You know, even in the North, you know, it's different, but so far New York do have a high police brutality problem, but I don't see where, you know, people, they going on TV. I don't see nobody in New York scared to go on TV because they got beat up by the police or their family. So that's where the big difference comes, is where, you know, they don't have, you know, they know what they're doing more so in the North. They have more conviction, let's put it like that. Mm-hmm. You know, in an acute manner, in an acute degree, they have more conviction or they're aware of what they're doing, even though it's not, even though it's not as bad as the South. And then you have some Southern whites that come up to the North and try to bring those same habits. Mm-hmm. And they can spread, you know, they can spread it. You know, you, what they say, one bad fruit can make a bunch of bad fruit bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to go to the phone lines now. We have a caller, and they have a comment or a question. And this is area code 804, last number 3056. Please go ahead with your question or your comment for Ms. Richardson.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I think that it's a wonderful idea and concept that Ms. Shawnette Richardson is spearheading and sparking. I did want to comment. I think she was struggling a little bit about the question, is there that same kind of division among whites similar to blacks? I've lived in the North. I've lived in New York. I've lived in the South. I've lived in Virginia. I've lived in Florida. I lived in Indiana. I spent a little bit of time in Johannesburg and Pretoria, and I had an opportunity to work in Racine. Mm-hmm. And so I had a chance to work with a lot of different whites that had Afrikaners talking across me and telling me things that were horrible. And luckily I had somebody sitting me from a Zulu tribe to translate what they were saying to me. So mm-hmm. I've seen racism in different extremes around the world. What I would say that in the United States, there are four key things, and there may be more, but the four things that jump off my mind when she was talking, that whites are able to use as tools to mitigate the division are politics. Tea Party would be an example. It's a mm-hmm. way for people to unify despite your political division. Whether you're Democrat or Republican, you can be Tea Party and unite to try to make your president of the United States look bad at all times. You mm-hmm. have religion. Organizations, say the Mormons and different groups, no matter where you are in the country, Church of Scientology is an example, they can put aside whether you're from the North or the South or the West Coast or the East Coast and unite to form a common bond. Mm-hmm. Wall Street. We saw what happened with the Occupy Wall Street stance. Those young people recognized that the economics the North and the South used to come together after the Civil War was Wall Street. So that's why they occupied Wall Street, so that they could hit the banks and the different power players and make their known, you know, make their demands known. But they went straight for the jugular. Very rarely do blacks in the United States have marches against Wall Street. We march on the Washington Monument and those types of things. And the last thing and the most powerful thing that I see is the media. By controlling the media and by controlling the images, you can take someone like Paula Deen, who says nigger 20 years ago or whenever it is she say it, and make it a rallying cry, so that those who feel that that was petty can unite with those who think that it's relevant. But despite whether you live north or south or you are, you know, one way or another, you can all unite whether you're for her or against her by whether or not you support her product. Same thing just recently happened with Duck Dynasty. You know, whether or not you're from the north or south is irrelevant. You can decide whether you're going to unite to support that family or you can unite to not do it. But they have tools that we as black Americans typically don't use until, I don't know, I'm still trying to figure that out. When will we wake up and start using these levers? Trayvon Martin, it takes a death of a black child, I guess, to wake us up to start thinking about, are we being petty? Am I judging someone because of the way they talk or where they live or how they dress, those types of things? But from my experience and my exposures, people who want to oppress other people under racism, they have tools and levers that they use to unify, and they stay focused on that. So that's all I want to contribute.
Okay, well, before you go, I had a question. I mean, you talked about, you know, you spent some time in South Africa as well, and you've seen the issues that, you know, black people in South Africa are facing and black people that in the U.S. are facing. Now, would you say that these are the same issues? Would an African family that is living in the U.S. face the same racial issues or the same economic issues that a black American family would face, you know, comparing it to them living in Africa? Would you say it's the same thing or would you say it is fundamentally different?
I would venture to say, and I would love for someone to correct me, but I would venture to say it is different. It is not the same. It's not the same. From the outside, someone may be seeking to oppress a black family from Africa who lives in Virginia simply because they're black. But on the inside, my feeling and my observation is for that family to get over here, they have to have a certain amount of endurance, perseverance, and mindset to say, we're leaving the continent of Africa to have a better life in the United States. We're not going to settle to be on a government subsistence program. We're not going to allow the government to tell us our child needs to be in special programs because they can't read and they can't add 1 and 1 plus 2 and those types of things. I may be stereotyping, but it seems to me that a person that leaves this country and goes to, just like my friends who left the United States to raise their family in South Africa, they're not going to go to South Africa, a status quo life, because they left this continent to seek a better life. So I think that it might not be apples to apples. Somebody who's racist may look at that family and say, I'm going to seek to oppress that family simply because of the color of their skin. But I think it's like if you pressed on a wall or you pressed on a sponge, you might exert the same amount of pressure, but that wall is going to push back. That sponge is going to let you push in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you so much for your comment and your question. I really appreciate you coming on the show today. We have another question or comment coming from area code 816, last number is 1245. Please go ahead with your question or your comment for Ms. Richardson.
Hello, Twombo. Hello, Ms. Richardson. I think it's morning. You're in the U.S.? Hi. I had a comment or question just for Ms. Richardson and also a reaction to the previous caller's comment. My question to Ms. Richardson was, I heard you mention, you know, you struggle with uniting the different Africans, and I think, I'm not sure if you included African Americans in your project, and you said, you know, there's such a difficulty for them to let go. The thing is, it is going to be difficult because there's that culture that is embedded in them that can be hard to let go, just like a person, an American, white or black, if they leave a certain region and relocate to another region, there are certain things about themselves, even though they will try as much as best as they can to adjust to the new region, that they will still not be able to let go. So I'm asking, or my question is, have you thought of other ways of going around that cultural divide and accepting some things that will not be changed, but then helping them to look at things that they can work on together as one people, as a black people? My question is, have you...
I know exactly what you're saying because I myself, you know, is a part of the example, but it comes in different degrees and angles. But, you know, I must have already been a black sheep of where I'm from in the South. I'm saying a gray black sheep from where I'm from. It was certain things that actually prepared me. You know, I will never, you know, I ain't gonna say I won't never, but one of the things I still have my speaking is certain Southern cultures I have, but it's certain Southern cultures I never had from young as a child. So, you know, one of my favorite quotes is by an anonymous person is preparation meet opportunity. So the way to manage, it's hard. Certain cultural things, if they have those negative culture standards, you know, they have to let it go. I mean, if you have cultural standards where you're worried about petty stuff, you know, it's kind of hard to get around it. That could take a magician. So it takes a person within themselves to be shown the facts, to be shown the information. And it does take a longer time for them to come to their own conviction of, okay, I realize this is not, you know, not going to progress myself or a future generation of my children.
Ms. Richardson, you are doing such a hard job. It's wonderful, and I commend you for it. The patience you have just to deal with different Africans, it's a lot. So I just want to appreciate your efforts, and thank you so much for what you're doing. Now, I want to react to the previous caller's remarks, and I hope I didn't take them out of context. It is true when you relocate from Africa to whichever part of the world, you have to have a different mindset. But then also do bear in mind there are people who left because they're more or less were forced out of their own living space. They became refugees in a temporal place, and America gave them refuge. So some of them didn't really have that time to adjust and are having a difficult time. It's different for a person who's leaving the United States to go to Africa. Of course, their mind also has to adjust, has to change, but it's a choice that they make. I came here by choice, but I know a lot of other people who did not have a choice, more more or less to say. They came from a southern, from the Sahara Desert, and then they put them in South Dakota or North Dakota. They had no choice in where they were going. They just placed them there because that was a place of refuge. So it was just a comment, just a reaction to the previous caller's comments.
Thank you so much, Ms. Lucas, for calling us and giving us your opinion and your comment. I really appreciate it. Ms. Richardson, what do you have to say about that? The fact that, you know, there are some Africans that come by choice and those that do not have a choice because, you know, they come as refugees. How are you planning on incorporating these people? Is that something that you've thought about?
Yes, and that takes a lot of detailed research, which definitely requires a lot of extra time. But definitely, you know, we definitely invite them to come and to be there, and they can more so, I know that, you know, some of them still have that thick British accent. I'm able to understand it maybe more than some Americans,
mm-hmm.
or you know. It could be understood by some Americans, then, you know, like most Southern Americans cannot understand the thick British accent when one is speaking English but thinking that they're speaking another language. So they're definitely invited, and it's definitely been a consideration, not a consideration, but it's definitely been in the plans, but it's just a lot of information to whirlwind out and definitely come near a solution.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we have another caller. We have a caller from the area code 804, last number 30456. Caller, are you there with your question?
Yes, I'm glad that the other caller sparked that distinction between the forced refugee and the person that has the choice to make the decision to relocate. Ms. Richardson, you might want to speak to, I don't know if you can, something that you recently learned, because that is part of the education, I would say, of a conference, of allowing us to see that there are all different types of circumstances and situations where people find themselves here as a black parent, but on the outside, people still just see you as a black parent, and they make assumptions that, you know, well, you should be able to do this because this Haitian family was able to do that, or this Jamaican family was able to do that, and, and not expect or appreciate there are differences to a forced relocation. And I think, Ms. Richardson, you had recently learned of something that was possibly going to impact those individuals. Are you able to speak about that?
You mean that, exactly. You know, it's been a lot of research, so remind me.
It was about when they come to the United States, there were certain benefits that they will now not be able, it's on, I guess, I don't know if it's on the decision box, but there is support that they used to be able to get to help them with that transition that the other caller was mentioning, that, you know, those people were just, you know, they were given refuge, but then they were put in a place where they really didn't have a support system. And now I think you told me that that is even at jeopardy right now, that there are some things in the works where they're trying to take that away.
Well, the updated status within the last few weeks, it has been eliminated. If they come here and they don't have a Social Security number, then they won't be able to get the general assistance, which is, let's say, city welfare. So, in which general assistance is only available in the majority north. In California, on the West Coast in California. It's not in the South, and it may not be, it's in the majority of the North, but in the West Coast. So when they come here, they usually, they're able to get a place to stay, you know, that they're staying in, of their own for general assistance, but they can't make any money. But, you know, they can't get any, they're limited the amount of refugee money that they get. They can't get food stamps. So they have to depend on Catholic Charities or, you know, similar organizations to Catholic Charities. So without them getting they'll be in shelters longer. You know, someone will have to graciously be taking them in. And then with that, if you stay with people sometime, I mean, you can't use people's addresses depending on certain factors, but they don't want to, you know what I'm saying, you don't need the shelters are very dangerous. And, you know, unless you got that mentality, that wild MR mentality, it's kind of like you got to be a tiger up mm-hmm. in there. So, and therefore, if they don't have an address, they're not in a shelter, then they're limited to even getting services to any services to the next level, because, you know, you have to decide whether you want to stay in a shelter to try to get your services. But then a shelter may be behind on funds. You may mm-hmm. have someone that's stealing the funds, or you may have it to where, because it's an overload of people, you have to wait a year. You don't get that help within that 1 to 4 months of getting your own place, helping you go through school. So you basically come here, may not know English sufficiently. Your definitions may be different. And so mm-hmm. therefore, someone may take you in, but you can't use their address because, you know, whatever factors they're in, but they don't want to see you out in the cold, and they know that living in a shelter is very uncomfortable and oppressive.
Okay, sorry to interrupt. I'd just like to go to the lines again. We have another caller with a question or a comment. Area code 612, last number is 5190. Please go ahead with your comment or your question for Ms. Richardson.
This is Titus Natala. I don't have a question as such. I came in late, so I'm just listening. Sorry, I know I pressed one. Maybe later
on. All right. Thank you so much, Titus.
You're doing a good job anyway. I'm listening. It's interesting.
Thank you very
much.
I'm
in Minnesota, so we have close to the North and South Dakota. So I'm listening, and I know more about refugees, whether it's Somali or Sudanese refugees, all up here, up north, okay. Midwest.
All right. Thank you so much, Titus. Ms. Richardson, as we're coming towards the end of the show, we only have about 8 minutes left, I would just like to say thank you for being on the show, and thank you for clarifying so much what State of the Black Parent does. And, of course, we've talked about, you know, different issues that have come up, and most interestingly, you know, we've talked about the differences between, you know, African families in the U.S. and Black families and how they can work together and how they can unite. And we've had the callers talk about the different experiences, you know, most recently coming up the fact that there are some people that come to the U.S. willingly, and there's some that come because they have to come. And now you've just told us that, you know, this form of assistance may no longer be there. Is this a conference that you're going to have, you know, continuously? This is the first one that you're having. Are you hoping to continue with this conference annually?
I'm definitely hoping to continue it. Yeah, but primarily focusing on doing the best, you know, having the best delivery for our grand premiere, definitely, and continue from there.
Okay, and can people still come on board and sponsor you? Can people still come and be, you know, on the panels? Is this something that is still open for people to contact you about?
Yes, definitely. They can definitely contact me. The email is stateoftheblackparent@gmail.com. They can contact me at area code 225, it's in the U.S., 395-1792. And leave a message if you call that number and you don't receive an answer.
Mm-hmm. Great. And people can come and be part of the panel and just, you know, buy tickets from you and come. Do you also set up accommodation for people that will be coming out of town?
We do have hotel information that is on the site. When you fill out the registration form and it asks about the hotel, and it has a store on the side where it asks about your hotel plans, it's going to show you the hotel that we have reserved and inform them that you're coming to the State of the Black Parent Conference, and they can book their hotel on that site.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what is it that you would just like, you know, the Black families that are listening to know? And since this is Zambia Block Talk Radio, we have a lot of listeners that are from Zambia, a lot of, you know, listeners that are African that are living in the U.S. or in Germany here where I am, in Australia. You know, we have lots of Black families listening from different parts of the world. What is your main message? What would you like Black parents out there to know as we come towards the end of our show?
I definitely like to know that, you know, we need to definitely get it together now. We need to know that history is prevalent. We do not need to start slacking in reading or having a concern about our history because, you know, one of the famous quotes is, you know, history repeats itself. That's a famous quote. I also, you know, if I could mention that on Monday we're going to have Malcolm X's daughter on our show. But they it's State of the Black Parent, Blog Talk Radio at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we'll be speaking with her on that, but definitely the message of our children starting out young to where they're not into this cartoon mentality young, and then you're waiting until they're 7, 8, 10 years old and you're lecturing and hounding them to get out of that cartoon mentality and then get into a get-right mentality. Very much if we could start them when they're young, really deal with it, because then, you know, we could so much definitely, you know, heal and definitely prevent much of what, you know, we're waiting to teach them as they get teenagers, then we're asking questions of why they don't take life serious. Well, they started off with cartoons, so that's why they're pretty much not taking life serious. You know, you go to many people's homes and they may not even have a dictionary, or the dictionary got the pages stuck together. So definitely we have to take an interest in reading and our community. It goes beyond what's going on and who is in my house and if it's not affecting me. It definitely goes, we can't do this as a handful of black people. We have to come as the masses. That's a quote of Dr. Omar Johnson.
Okay, and would you be willing, you know, as the organization State of the Black Parent, would you be willing to work with other organizations, you know, like yours, or if somebody thinks about starting an organization like yours in different parts of the world, would you be willing to work with them and teach them what it is that you've learned with your own, you know, organization?
Oh, yes, definitely interested in the networking, because I know one thing, I can't be a million places at once, so definitely interested in further outreach and networking with each other. They can contact me on a number by listening to the replay, 225-395-1792, or they can go to our website and send us an email. They go to the Tools tab and go to Contact Us. That will be the form where they can send us an email for further discussion.
Okay, so I'd like to thank Mrs. Richardson for being on the show with us. If you need more information about everything that she has spoken about, her website is www.stateoftheblackparent.org. I'd really like to thank you for being on the show. Thank you for enlightening us. Thank you for letting us know that there is somewhere we can go to talk about our issues. I'd like to thank the listeners and the callers. Thank you for participating. And just to remind you one more time, for all those that are in the Irving, Texas area, there's going to be a memorial service for Dr. Nathan Kama's mother. It'll be at 2108 Heard Drive, number 100, Irving, Texas, 75038. And coming up next, we're going to be discussing mining in the Lower Zambezi and the Luangwa Park. This is something that the government of Zambia has agreed to go forward with, and this is something that a lot of people do not want, destroying the ecosystem. So thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you, Mrs. Richardson, again, for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And if anybody would like more information to listen to her shows, she's also on Blog Talk Radio. Just go ahead and search for State of the Black Parent on the Blog Talk Radio page and tune in on Monday for that show where she's going to be having Malcolm X's daughter on there. I'm definitely going to tune in and listen and learn a little bit more. So thank you so much, everybody, for listening in. Stay tuned on Zambia Blog Talk Radio for the next program. Ms. Matilda Lucas is going to be taking that one. Mr. Charlie will be on after she is. So thank you so much, everybody. Have a good afternoon, a good morning, and a good evening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Dude, you don't see that on the... Yeah, me a record production. You want me now, love. You want me now, love.